Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're airing the second part of Dr. Meeker's interview with Dr. Leonard Sachs. Dr. Sachs graduated Phi Beta Kappa from MIT at the age of 19. He then earned both a PhD and an MD at the University of Pennsylvania. He is the author of several books, including Why Gender Matters, Boys Adrift, and Girls on the Edge. Dr. Sachs is also an international speaker on issues of child and adolescent behavior and has appeared on The Today Show, CNN, National Public Radio, PBS, and many other national and international media outlets. He is a trusted voice on issues of gender, sexuality, and parenting. Yesterday, Dr. Sachs talked about the many ways the toxic culture impacts children and teens. So let's listen in as he discusses how parents can use their authority to guide their children through these turbulent times.
Dr. Sachs, thank you so much for joining me again today. It was a terrific show yesterday, and I appreciate so much of what you have to say. You have so much wisdom about gender identity issues, what boys need, what girls need, but most importantly, some really practical tools for parents out there who are scared and worried that their kids are going to go down the wrong path. So thank you for joining me again.
Thank you.
You are currently working on a book on the transfer of authority that has taken place, this cultural shift in parenting over the past 10 to 20 years. I don't know, maybe you can tell me, on how parents are giving too much authority to their children and the effects that that is having on their children. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So many parents in the United States today believe some version of the notion that good parenting means letting kids decide. And in some domains, that might be true. But in many domains, it's not true. So, for example, I was speaking to parents in Westchester County, New York. Mom and dad had made a healthy and nutritious supper for their son and daughter. Son and daughter came home and said, "Ooh, yuck, we don't want to eat that. Can we just order pizza?" And dad said, "Okay." And I asked father, "Why did you say okay? Why didn't you just say, well, this is what's for supper?" And he said, "Well, I don't believe in using starvation as a means of discipline." And I said, "They're not going to starve. Look, 30 years ago, if a mom made supper for kids and the kids said, ooh, yuck, I don't want to eat that, she would say, all right, you'll see it again tomorrow. This is what's for supper. If you don't like it, you can go to bed hungry." She wasn't going to order pizza for them because they didn't approve of her choice of supper. Mm. Over the past 40 years, the rate of obesity among American children and teenagers has quadrupled. It's gone from roughly 4% to roughly 18%. Why? Well, there's a couple reasons why. This isn't the only part of the story, but it is part of the story. 40 years ago, pizza, french fries, potato chips, and ice cream were occasional treats. Now they are daily fare. Mm-hmm. And I know families that have two or three kids where the parent is asking the kids what they want for supper, and this kid wants one thing, and the other kid wants another thing, and the parents are making both. I was at a school, a private school, that serves affluent families, and the principal was trying to enforce their policy of no personal use of cell phones in the school. And he got tremendous pushback from the parents. A parent called and said, "Look, I've got to be able to text my daughter. I give her a choice of what she wants for supper, and then she tells me what we'll have. Because, I don't want to end up making supper and she won't eat it, and I have to make something else." And the principal was like, "Are you kidding? Is this for real? You're the grown-up. She's the kid. You can decide what's for supper without getting your 12-year-old's permission." Mm-hmm. And yet that's what's happened in the United States, this transfer of authority from parents to kids. Look, kids are not competent to choose what's for supper. If you let 12-year-olds decide what's for supper, you're going to have a lot of pizza, french fries, and potato chips, and not a whole lot of broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, and spinach. Mm-hmm. That's to be expected. That's why kids have parents. But when parents abdicate that authority and let kids decide what's for supper, one result is you get a lot more fat kids. But it's not just food and it's not just overweight. It's a much deeper and much more profound phenomenon. Suppose you've got a kid who's misbehaving, a kid who's talking back at school, rude and disrespectful. 30 years ago, a teacher administrator would have said to parents, "Hey, your son is rude, he's disrespectful, he talks back. That's not acceptable. We need you to teach him what it means to be a gentleman. Today, the same behavior, same kid in the same neighborhood in the United States, it is much more likely the teacher or the administrator is going to say, you know, your child may meet criteria for oppositional defiant disorder. Have you thought of having him evaluated? Mm-hmm. And he goes to the board-certified child psychiatrist who starts Risperdal, or Zyprexa, right. or Seroquel. And the medication works.
Right.
Bad behavior stops.
Right.
But there's been a medicalization of misbehavior because the parents and the grown-ups generally are uncomfortable asserting their authority. And instead, it's easier to have a doctor prescribe a medication. In the United States, a child in the United States today is 17 times more likely to be on medication for ADD compared to a child in the United Kingdom. A child in the United States is 40 times more likely to be on medication for bipolar disorder compared to a child in Germany. A child in the United States is 93 times more likely to be on the antipsychotic medications Seroquel, Risperdal, Zyprexa compared to a child in Italy. We are medicating kids in this country because parents, many parents, have lost the authority to do their job.
Now, if I were a psychiatrist on the opposite end of the spectrum from you, I know you're a psychologist, not a psychiatrist, he or she might say, well, we're much better at diagnosing it, and that's why you see those numbers go up. And you would say?
I would respond as the Germans did. In the German paper comparing the rate of bipolar disorder in the United States with the rate in Germany, they said it's really quite unlikely that bipolar disorder is 40 times more likely
right.
in the United States than it is in Germany. It is simply the case that American doctors are over-prescribing, that they are treating mood swings and temper tantrums with medications prescribed for bipolar disorder. An 8-year-old who has mood swings, who is pleasant and happy 1 minute and screaming and shouting the next minute, anywhere else in the world, parents are going to be told, your child's having mood swings. You need to teach him something about self-control. But in this country, led by Dr. Joseph Biederman, director of pediatric psychiatric research at Harvard Medical School, Dr. Biederman says, no, this child has bipolar disorder and should be on Risperdal. Well, then we discovered that the manufacturers of Risperdal have paid Dr. Biederman and his colleagues more than $4 million cash under the table, which he never disclosed. He was functioning as a paid spokesperson for the drug companies, and he didn't tell anybody. He was not removed from his post. He did not have to pay the money back. He's still the distinguished director of psychiatric research at Harvard Medical School. So we've got a real broken system in this country.
This is really unbelievable stuff. It really is. And so you've really got a transfer of power on many different levels. You've got a parent giving authority to the child. You've got a parent abdicating to a physician and saying, here's my child, you fix the problem, because there is a problem, and the problem certainly isn't me.
Well, and I don't blame the parent, because this has happened systemically in the United States, but you can educate that parent, and you can say, look, you're living in a toxic culture and a broken system. I was visiting a school in St. Louis. I was in the second grade classroom, and the teacher was trying to teach a lesson, and one of the boys was running around the room making a buzzing noise. And she said, look, I need you to sit down. You're really distracting all the other children. And he kept running around. She said, you need to sit down or else. And he said, or else what? And she said, or else I will make you sit down. And he said, I'd like to see you try. So she grabbed him and tried to push him into a chair, and he bit her. He bit the teacher hard on the wrist, broke the skin, drew blood, ran out of the hallway laughing, he did. She called this child's mother. And she said, I need to let you know, your child bit me today, drew blood, we'll have to file an incident report, and I want you to be aware of this incident. And mom said, well, he has a psychiatric disorder, you know, he probably needs a change in his medication, you should have called the psychiatrist first, don't you have his number? That's what I mean by the medicalization of misbehavior.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, maybe this kid does have some issues, but that's not a reason for the parents to abdicate authority to the prescribing psychiatrist. On the contrary, the parents should be more involved teaching their kid, look, this is what's acceptable and this is not acceptable. And yet many parents have backed away, and why not? you can't blame them. You have to sit and talk with them, because after all, the board-certified child psychiatrist is stepping into that role, in most cases, very comfortably. And the psychiatrists themselves will tell you and have told me, you know what, it's so much easier just to write the prescription than to have a long talk with parents about how, look, you need to be stepping up in your role as parents. That's not going to win you any fan letters from the parents. On the contrary, they may go somewhere else.
Well, and you won't. And I think that, in fairness to that psychiatrist in the chair, because I felt like that, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm a pediatrician, but the times that I try to encourage parents to change their own behavior, to flex a little bit of muscle in a very positive way in their homes, exert some authority, I feel that my advice is falling on deaf ears. I feel that many parents have lost a sense of self-esteem as a parent. They've thrown all their power away, and I don't know why they've thrown it. Do they have no self-respect? And I think that parents are very, very confused. They feel that they shouldn't have an authority, or they're going to be oppressive to their children. They feel that perhaps a psychiatrist is right and they're wrong. And I think parents kind of don't know what to do.
When the board-certified psychiatrist says your child needs Risperdal, Zyprexa, Adderall, Concerta, Betadate, Focalin, Ditronav, Advance, whatever, the parent doesn't have a medical degree. And
right.
The parent may feel uncomfortable challenging that. If the psychiatrist says, this is what my child needs, I want what's best for my child. And that's why when a parent, you know, if the parent is absolutely a diehard believer, I don't even go there, because it's just a waste of time. But if a parent says, you know, I'm concerned about medicating my young child, is there a different way? Does my child really need to be on this? Then absolutely, I will sit with that parent and take whatever time is needed. I had a family who, they were stationed in England for 4 years. A father was a contractor for the military, civilian contractor, Americans living in England. And then when they came home, their son was 8 years old. They enrolled him in local public schools here in Pennsylvania. You know, kid was an average student, not great, not terrible. And the parents were amazed at how within weeks, other parents, the principal, were saying, hey, your kid, you know, might be capable of doing much better. And she said it was weird. It was like there was a conspiracy. Everybody wants to put my kid on medication here. So that's often where I'll start with parents, to give them that international perspective. Nobody else is doing this. Nobody else is prescribing medication as the first intervention.
Right. You are going to discuss in your upcoming book that comes out in December, not only just the transfer of power that parents are giving to their children, but you also talk about how parents are putting a premium on creating a portfolio for their kids, making sure they get straight A's, making sure they're on the right soccer team, and they're really focusing on performance and not character. Why is focusing on character so much more important to a child's ultimate success in life than on his grades or soccer achievements?
What matters is the way I begin that question. What is the most important thing we need to do as parents? Is it to boost our kids' academic performance, their athletic performance, to help them to be popular? It's not a guess. It would have been a guess 20 or 30 years ago, but we now have really good studies in which researchers followed large groups of kids, thousands of kids, from birth through childhood into adolescence and into adulthood, and looked at what parents were doing, and then looked at age 30, 32, 38, years of age. This kid that they began following in infancy is now an adult in their 30s. Is this adult happy or unhappy? Are they earning a good income or not? Are they addicted to drugs or alcohol or not? Are they physically healthy or not? Have they been convicted of a crime? Have they been convicted of a felony or not? And what you find is that the most important predictor of happiness, of wealth, of life satisfaction, of good health, is measures of character and virtue, measures of self-control. Whether you're earning A's or B's at age 11 or 14 does not predict whether you're going to be addicted to drugs or alcohol at age 30, either way. But whether you can exert some self-control at age 11 or 14 very powerfully predicts whether you're going to be addicted to drugs or alcohol at age 30. It also predicts whether you're going to be earning good money at age 30, whether you're going to be convicted of a crime or not at age 30. And the good news for parents is that self-control is not fixed. It's not a parameter like eye color or height. You cannot change your child's natural eye color, but you can improve their self-control. You improve self-control by saying no dessert until you eat your broccoli, no playing games until you do your homework, no video games until you have cleaned up your bedroom. These are things American parents used to know, and many have forgotten.
But a parent would say, listening to that, yes, Dr. Sachs, but that doesn't sound like teaching self-control. That sounds like imposing control on the child. How does imposing control on a young child lead to self-control later in life?
Yes, and the most common variation I get on the question is, if I force my child to do the right things at age 14, 15, 16, 17, what's going to happen when they go away to college and they can do whatever they want? Shouldn't I allow them that liberty at age 14 to do whatever they want so that they can make good choices? Nice idea, but the evidence very strongly in the other direction.
Doesn't work.
So there's a line in the book of Proverbs. If you raise up a child in the way they should go, when they are grown up, they will not depart from it. So what does the scholarly evidence have to say? Yeah, scholarly evidence would say that the book of Proverbs is a little optimistic. If you raise up a child in the way they should go, there are no guarantees, but you have improved the odds. You have improved the odds. So if at age 14, 15, 16, 17, you have insisted that your kids turn off the screens and get a good night's sleep, and you have not allowed your son to stay up till 2 in the morning playing video games, you have not allowed your daughter to stay up till 2 in the morning uploading photos to her Instagram, you've improved the odds that when she goes to university, she will continue behaving as she should. But if at 14, 15, 16, 17 years of age, your son has gotten in the habit of spending 2 or 3 hours a night playing video games, your daughter's gotten in the habit of spending 2 or 3 hours a night on social media, what's the likelihood that when she goes to university, she's going to say, oh, well, now that I'm at university and my parents aren't even here, I'm going to turn over a leaf and become a very virtuous young person, even as I see so many of my peers staying up all night on social media and video games? Not very likely.
No.
How do you teach a virtue? You teach a virtue by inculcating good behavior.
Right.
And
it's
you
really
don't inculcate good behaviors by preaching them. You inculcate good behaviors by requiring them.
Right. You're creating familiarity of living a life in control. And kids go back to what they're familiar with, be that good or be it bad. That's why girls who have been abused grow up to marry abusers very frequently, because that's their level of comfort. That's what they know. And they'll choose what they know, even if it's bad for them, over what they don't know if it's good for them. So I think that's a tremendous example that you've just given us. That's why we must impose control on kids when they're younger, so that they develop really good habits.
Aristotle wrote about this, 2,500 years ago, that you become virtuous by acting virtuously. And Will Durant, commenting on that, said that excellence is a matter of habit. It's something that you teach yourself to do so that the right action becomes automatic. Mm-hmm. So, instead of wondering at 11 o'clock at night, should I stay up a few more hours and play video games, or should I go to bed? You go to bed because that's what you do. But if you let kids decide, that boy may think, well, I'm not feeling that tired right now. I could probably spend half an hour playing video games. And at 3 in the morning, he is still playing. You teach virtue by requiring virtuous behavior. Parents used to know this, and they have forgotten.
We don't have much time left, but can you tell us some of the most important virtues that parents should teach their children?
Absolutely. I've thought about it a lot. I've talked about that with many parents. The answer is to teach humility. Humility, I think, is the most important of the virtues for us to teach today in the United States. Why? Because humility is the most un-American of virtues. It's easy to teach grit, perseverance, because ultimately that's all about the self. That's all about going for what you want. But teaching humility, many American parents don't even know what you're talking about.
Right.
What does it mean? What is humility? I have found well-educated parents in this country who think that humility means trying to convince yourself you're dumb when you know that you're smart. That's right. Not humility. That is psychosis.
That's a great line.
Humility is very simple. It simply means being as interested in other people as you are in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It means that before you give a little speechlet about your current activities when you meet someone new, you try to find out what they're doing, what they're about. What is the secret to happiness? The secret to happiness is contentment. And the secret to contentment is humility, to be grateful for your portion. Instead, in this country, we teach bloated self-esteem. I was in another school in this country recently, third grade classroom, and the assignment to the students was to make a little poster with your name and describe five of your most amazing attributes. And a boy had written his name. I took a picture of this, and he is awesome, brilliant, a genius, misspelled, excellent, misspelled. Okay, this is not funny. This is really harmful. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a primary care physician, I have followed the same kid for 18 years. And I can tell you that this bloated self-esteem, this kid who thinks he's awesome and a genius at age 15, will lead to resentment
mm-hmm.
at age 25. I've seen it. Because if you think you're the greatest kid out there because you have been indoctrinated to believe that, and this young woman writes this novel, she can't get an agent, she's unemployed at age 25, and she is resentful that this other kid has gotten their novel published and they're on the Today Show and she can't even get an agent. Bloated self-esteem leads to resentment. Humility leads to contentment, leads to happiness. Teach humility. How do you do that? You require a kid to do chores. I find many American families, especially affluent families, where the kids are now exempt from chores. The kids are so overscheduled with ballet class and soccer practice that there is no time for them to do chores.
Mm-hmm.
And so the parents think, well, it's more important that she get straight A's and do her travel soccer team, and we can hire a service to do the lawn. We can hire a housekeeper to take care of the house. Big mistake. The message the parents are sending unintentionally is that you are too important to do menial chores. And again, you're puffing up this bloated self-esteem. You're not teaching humility. You need to teach humility. You need to model humility. You need to be as interested in other people as you are in yourself. You need to teach your child to do that. Teach humility, the most un-American of virtues.
Mm, beautifully said. Beautifully said. And I see a picture of that family that you're describing where the child is sort of sitting at the center of the family universe and everybody's almost bowing down. What do you need?
Serving
what do
child.
You want? And how destructive that is to that child because they never learn to serve, to think of other people. And it's a very, very distorted family view, worldview, and a distorted sense of self. Dr. Sacks, thank you so much for your time. You've been very, very gracious. I highly recommend your new book. I'm sure it's going to be even better than the last three that you've written, which are extraordinary. And I particularly like Why Gender Matters, particularly important in this day and age with all the confusion of sexual identity and Bruce Jenner. So blessings to you. Good luck with all of your work. And I hope that that book hits New York Times bestseller.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Sacks is such a clear voice for parents in today's toxic culture. He really helps parents focus on the most important issues for raising confident, well-rounded children. We've been listening to the second half of this interview, and I urge you to check out his website, where he goes into more depth about a variety of gender and parenting issues. You can also find out more about his earlier books that Dr. Meeker mentions at the end of the broadcast, or get updates about his upcoming book on parenting. You'll find all those links at our website, drjamesdobson.org. Here at Family Talk, we understand that intentional parenting may be tougher when a couple is struggling in their marriage. If that's you or someone you love, let me tell you about our exclusive offer for October. For every donation of $20 or more, we'll say thank you by sending you a copy of my dad's book, Love Must Be Tough. Call us at 877-732-6825 or click the tab at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
When you become a parent, you find out quickly that kids don't come with instruction manuals, but you'll be glad to know that now they do, or at least with an iPhone app, free from Family Talk. This app personalizes resource around where you are in life. Whether you're a mom, dad, or looking for encouragement in your marriage, this app is for you. The app is packed with parenting and marriage advice from the expert on such matters, Dr. James Dobson. Go to the Family Talk website at drjamesdobson.org/app to download your free customized Family Talk app today.